What's up, guys? Welcome to the sesh. Today, I got a very special guest. Judge, please introduce yourself.
Sure. My name is Richard Cortez. I'm the county judge of Hidalgo County.
So I know you're a very busy man. And the reason I wanted you on today is because I've been noticing a lot going on, not only in the Rio Grande Valley, but throughout the United States. And I feel like it's a work ethic thing. I don't know if I'm wrong, but maybe you see it from a bigger position. Is there work ethic out there? Because I feel like a lot of people just don't want to work.
Well, I agree with you. Unfortunately, I think there's some truth to that statement. You know, when we grew up, having a job was a positive thing, you know. So when we got a job, we wanted to work hard at it because we wanted to keep it. Now it seems that, you know, today's people not only want a job, they want a job that's easy for them. So many are wanting to work at home as opposed to go to an office. They want flexible hours. So it's the workforce has really changed over time.
I feel like it's COVID kind of spread that. It pushed it into the limelight. It's like you guys are going to start to work from home. And if they didn't work from home and figure it out, then they were screwed. How does that work?
No, that's true. You know, we had architectural firms and engineering firms that during COVID, they sent people home. And they found out that, you know, they didn't need to lease a big office building and have everybody there, that a lot of the work they could do could be done offsite. So some of that contributed to it. But I think, you know, especially women, you know, and I can certainly understand that a mother wants to be close to the child and wants to make it easy on them. And you know, I have two daughters that had children, and they need to take them to school, pick them up in school, and take them here and there. So I understand the need to have flexible working hours, but it has created a problem throughout the United States.
How do we fix that?
Well, I really don't know. I think that all of us have to accept that change is going to happen, and that as that change is happening, you're not always going to get 100% of what you want. You have to have a tolerance level. This is what I tell my commissioners and myself when I want to do something. Let's take animal control here in Hidalgo County. You know, we have the pet lovers that don't want to have anyone killed. They want to save all the animals. And there's a cost to that. So at some point in time, we have to sit down and say, you know, we can't have 100%. It's just not possible. So what is a proper tolerance level? Is it 10%? Is it 20%? What it is? Always working to try to get to 100%, but it's a working process. It's a goal that you have that's not achievable today, but hopefully it's achievable tomorrow through proper planning. So you have to get together with people. You know, the way that you structure a strategic plan is, you know, what's the goal? What resources are available to me to accomplish the goal? What obstacles am I going to have to remove to accomplish my goal? And how do I apply my resources, you know, to remove the obstacles to accomplish my goal? Well, that takes thought and care and discussion and deliberation and some compromises. And I think that if people are willing to do that, then I think we can have a better chance of succeeding. I'm being verbose here, speaking a lot, but you know, I get criticized a lot from people, but all the criticism never comes with a solution.
Yeah.
You know, so they want to criticize you for not fixing something, but they don't offer the solution.
Well, also at the speed of which it changes, because sometimes I don't think people really understand. It's like they're going on social media, it's like, I want this done now. I want this done now. We live in an instant gratification world, but it just does not work like that. Can you kind of touch on that? Because I think the world that we live in, and I see it every single day, because I am consumed by social media, like it's my job. So I see that people want what they want right then and there, and when they don't get it, they turn on you.
Yeah. Well, you know, social media is an interesting situation here. My father told me, he wasn't a very educated person, but he was very wise. He said, mijito, never pick a fight with somebody that buys ink by the barrel. And at that time, of course, people would be receiving information usually from newspapers, from the printed form, magazines, stuff like that. Well, now with social media, anybody can express an opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what I see a lot is, take for instance, when Mexicans were not allowed to cross over here during COVID, I would get criticized because, Judge, when are you going to open the bridges? Well, I have no authority to open an international bridge. That's not something that I can do. But some people thought that I was to blame for people not coming over here.
Because they need someone to blame.
Well, they need someone to blame, but I wish that if they were going to do that, for them to get their facts. And a lot of times, you know, when we go into executive session, closed doors, there's a purpose. And it's not that we're trying to keep things away from the public, because I believe in transparency. But sometimes you need to keep certain things confidential as you're moving forward in certain strategies. But golly, I don't know the answer. I don't know the answer to that. All I hope is that you know, people are respectful to one another. You know, right now everybody criticizes our president. It's like he's a nothing. You know, yeah. Anybody can criticize our president. When I was growing up, I mean, our president was a very respectful person, and we respected our president. And when we disagreed with our president, we disagreed respectfully with our president. So I hope that as the generations coming along, that we learn that being respectful is so much better than being disrespectful.
Where do you think that comes from, though? Because I'm in the same boat, too, as I always grew up, and this president is a respectful figure. Like, you don't talk bad about the president. Like, where do you think that's stemming from?
You know, I don't know. I'm not happy with Republicans, and I'm not happy with Democrats, because all we see is them fighting one another instead of trying to get together and find solutions to the problems that we have. You know, today I've spent most of my morning, you know, trying to find resources to help me, you know, promote Hidalgo County so we can bring, you know, better companies that provide better jobs for our people. We had 46% domestic migration, meaning that we lost almost 46% of our people left this area. We made it up with others coming into this area, but we're losing our human capital because some of the educated people, some of the technically trained people are having to leave because the jobs are not here. So we have to sit down and quit talking how bad we are and change that to how good we are if we're going to attract somebody here. But you know, I don't know what to tell you. I get very discouraged because, you know, I'm not perfect. I mean, I don't make perfect decisions all the time. I try to make them, but I know that I can't. But working together and having some sensitivity to one another helps us come together to try to find a solution. What is the answer? I don't know. I just know that if you go to social media, there's at least a 20 or 30% very unhappy people.
Yeah.
and they're being very vocal in expressing their dissatisfaction with something or the other. But again, out of all of those people, I haven't heard solutions.
That's interesting. I have never heard that statistic. 46% of the people have left.
Yes.
Is it a money thing?
I think it's a lack of opportunity here for some people. You know, we have 500,000 jobs in Hidalgo County. The good news is 380,000 are people working and earning above poverty. 120 are working, but they're earning below poverty. And 6% of that 120,000 are college graduates. So what does that tell you? It tells you that they want to stay here, that they went and got an education, but the jobs are not here. So a lot of them are leaving. So that's a big issue for me, and that's something that I'm dedicating a lot of my time to try to improve that. That's not a quick turnaround goal, right. But it's certainly one that we have to start the journey. if we're going to turn it around.
When you come up, like, because you are obviously a leader and you're in a leadership position, what is the thought processes that you go through, like, in your head when you're deciding on, like, this is what I'm going to do? What are those steps that you use to be able to come to the decision, like, this is what I'm going to go through and this is it?
Well, that's a good question. There are short-term goals, mid-term goals, and long-term goals. The short-term goals, I write them down, and I say, which ones are the most important, and which ones can I complete the quicker? So if I have 10 short-term goals, then I want to do the three that's going to take me one day to do. So I can get rid of them now. I'm only dealing with seven. And then out of the seven, how do I prioritize them? Well, which one is going to give me the most benefit? So that's how I tackle those things. But the long-term goals, those are more complicated. And I have a long-term goal here, and that is to reduce the level of poverty in Hidalgo County. We have our welfare line growing faster than our taxpayer line, and that means that our future is not going to be good if that continues. So we have to provide opportunity, you know, for the people in Hidalgo County, and we can't do it only internally. We have to do it externally by attracting outside investment to come here. And today we're dealing in a very competitive world, Take yourself, for instance, here. You're excellent at what you do, but is somebody better than you? Probably there is. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Probably somewhere is better than you, and probably somebody's better than that somebody along. So we're in a very competitive world.
That's the nature of business.
Yeah, that's the nature of business. So we want to be as good as we can get. And I gave a speech the other day, and it wasn't original. I simply read the book. It said that good is the enemy of great. Because people get complacent with being good. So if you're complacent with being good and happy with being good, you'll never be great.
Yeah.
Okay. So here on my long-term goals, it's better for us to invest in human capital than to continue with the push-down policies that we have. The push-down policy says, oh, somebody's poor, somebody's this, somebody's that. Well, let's send money to them. Well, it only helps them short term because you have to continue to send money over and over and over and over again because the need is going to be there over and over and over again. I'd rather say, hey, wait a minute, how can I help you take care of yourself and for you to take care of your family? How can I help you do that? And that's what this this prosperity task force that I put together is intended to do, is to try to help people get out of poverty, not by giving them things, but creating human capital among them.
When you talk about human capital, we're talking about bringing outside companies in to be able to employ these people?
Well, no, that's the second step. Human capital is how can I bring value to somebody that needs a service or something? So if I'm an accountant and I have accounting skills and somebody needs accounting skills, well, then I can sell those accounting skills. If I'm a lawyer, if I'm a plumber, if I'm an electrician, if I'm a technician, if I'm a fence builder, if I'm a construction, all those are human capitals that the economy is going to want to need to purchase from you. So what we're doing here is in the Valley is that based on the jobs that we have, sometimes we do have human capital to provide the jobs, but the job is not here. Okay. So it's a two-prong process, is how do we create the human capital, but how do we match the job with it? And this is where, you know, job creation and attraction is very important. Today, you know, I had a conversation with Moody Foundation because I do like for them maybe to help me finance some money, because I told them that how do people find out about it? Well, we have to have collateral material. We have to have somebody like you put a program together that says, hey, look at Hidalgo County. We have 5 international bridges. We have a medical school. We have 8 acute care hospitals. We have UTRGV. We have Texas A&M McAllen. We have South Texas College. You know, we have all of these things. But how do you put it and present it in a powerful message? Well, that's why we go people like you to help us create that critical message information so that we can send it to people and say, hey, wait a minute. It all kind of sounds like where I want to be. Mm-hmm. And I'm smiling because someone, when I sent a letter to Disney for them to come over here, you know, social media, really, Judge? Really? You really think Disney's going to come over here? And, you know, I'm sitting here and I said, why are these people so unhappy with their lives? I said, I can't win a lotto unless I buy a ticket.
Right.
Okay? We can't get Disney unless
they know
where we are and at least invite them to come here. So that's one. But the most important thing that happened from that letter is I got to tell the whole world about Hidalgo County, and it didn't cost me a dime.
Right. That's the one thing I love about social media. That's the one thing I love about it and I hate about it, because everybody has a voice. And it, I feel like, you know, some people should not be on social media. But one of the other things I wanted to talk about is you touched on poverty. None of that had never really bothered me until I started researching you. And I really saw that there's about 29% of the Rio Grande Valley is in poverty.
Well, that is the official census amount, but I can tell you with a lot of confidence that, we're closer to 40%.
Wow. Oh, that's, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so you have to remember that about 20% of our population is not here, or not legal residents. Mm-hmm. So those kind of live in the shadows, but many of them are in poverty.
That's interesting. So how do those people survive?
Well, my first thing in the morning is to thank the Lord for all the blessings He's given me. I mean, it's been very difficult for them, in many cases. I mean, I've seen homes where they have no running water, they don't have any sanitation. Not all homes like that, but some homes like that. You know, they live from day to day. When I became county judge, I sit on the board of the Workforce Commission. I received a package of information, and it said Hidalgo County has 27% food insecurity for children. I said, come on, that's not possible. That's way, way too high. And they said, no, and we can prove that out. Well, 2 years later, when I go to the same meeting and get the same updated report, the food insecurity grew to 37%.
Wow.
And food insecurity doesn't mean you don't have any food. It means that you don't have access to a variety of food. You don't have access to sufficient amount of food. It's not like you don't have any food. It's just you have
limited options.
Limited options. So to me, that's why this Prosperity Task Force has become to me, the most important goal that I have as county judge, because I think that can do the greater good.
Let's dig into that a little bit more. What exactly does that do?
Well, here's the best way that I can explain it to you. We basically have three goals. The first goal is, let's identify all the people in poverty. Let's make sure that we can communicate with them. So we need to have a database. The food bank does something for them. Clinics do something for them. There are different providers of services to them, but we're not connected to one another. So I said, let's build a database of all the people that if the county has a grant or a program where we can, you know, pay for the electricity or pay for their mortgage or pay for the rent. We want to know who they are, so we can make sure that we funnel those investments or those monies to them. So that's goal number one: is how do we efficiently and effectively serve people in poverty? But our second goal is: hey, what percentage of those people in poverty can we get out of poverty? Let's identify those people, and let's put them on a path to create that human capital. So in order for us to do that, I said, well, golly, you know, how do we do that? Well, it's a variation of steps. The first step is somebody has to recommend somebody to us. Then I need a counselor, and the counselor to go in there and says, Juan, sit down. Okay, you speak English, you have a driver's license, you know, kind of interview him and find out, say, you know, Juan can be a good plumber, good electrician. Heck, he can be an X-ray technician. He can be an accountant. You know, he can do all these things. So now we know what Juan has the capacity to do. Then we know that if you go to college and you don't have a mentor, you have only a 20% chance that you're going to go to become a sophomore. But if you go to college and you have a mentor, then you have almost 80% chance of becoming a sophomore, because that mentor helps you, you know, transition from high school to college, then to the next level. So after the counselor comes up, we assign a mentor to that person, and that mentor is there. You know, Juan, you know, you don't have a lot of experience in finances. You don't have a lot of experience in this. I'm here to help you, hopefully, develop the best decision that you can. So let's say that we go through that process, and man, Juan, you're making an excellent accountant. Now we change the mentor. The mentor here first is just a person that cares, to a person now that's an accountant, to say, Juan, here's what I think you need to do to become an accountant. So while you're going through that process, you have this mentor to go to. And I found that out because, you know, I'm an accountant, and my grandchildren, you know, took accounting in college, and all of a sudden their grandpa was very important because they were stuck in some accounting stuff, and grandpa helped them. So I know the value of a student having that mentor. So now we go through all of that process, and Juan becomes an accountant. It's all for naught if Juan cannot find a job that's going to pay him well, okay? And right now, you know, we have two pots, and this is what I'm talking to the people that are helping me in this prosperity task force. I said, we have a pot of the jobs that are available, okay? And those are the only jobs that are available, Rob. Whatever's available now, that's the only thing that's available. So one of the things we can do is how can we increase capacity in the jobs that we have here today already? But that's not the solution. That's just a temporary help. We need to create another pot of jobs, and the jobs that we don't have that we want to bring here. So that becomes a different strategy for us to bring those jobs in. That's why I'm right in the middle, and I'm almost there, hiring an economist. I'm going to hire the economist that brought Tesla to Austin and Toyota to San Antonio, you know, to help us structure a very well thought out job creation plan to identify the companies that we need, and hopefully we can recruit them. But how do you contact those companies and how do you recruit them? Here's where guys like you come in, where somebody that can put a really good, I'll call it a sexy, you know, marketing tool that says,
look at us.
Look at us.
Yeah.
Look at how great we are. We have we graduate more high school graduates every year than what 15 states graduate. Imagine that. We graduate more high school students every year than what 15 other states graduate. So if you're looking for young people that you want to train and be in your workforce, whatever, come down here. Then you don't have to worry about digging yourself out of snow. You don't have to worry about all this thing. So who sends that message? The problems that we've had here in the Valley is that we have study after study after study of what we need to do, but no one's executing the plan.
Is that coming from like a money thing? Is like, is it just as easy as like, here's some money, fix the problem? Or does it go deeper than that?
You know, I don't know the answer to that. I think we're fragmented, is that the county is made up of 22 cities and the county. In every city, sometimes we have this Friday night mentality that, you know, hey, I want to be McAllen, or I want to be the Edinburgh, or I want to be better than this. And we're concentrating and competing among ourselves instead of coming together and compete with somebody from the outside. I think we're in a perfect storm right now, where we have some very good leadership in the cities, the mayors, the people in government now. I feel we have good people that want to do exactly what I'm saying, of getting together and marketing ourselves as one, not as many.
You know, an interesting thing is artificial intelligence. Have you dabbled with that yet?
Please tell me what it is. I want to make sure that I understand what that
is. So like ChatGPT is out right now, and I've been fascinated with it since January. Since I got access to it, I've been on it for 2-3 hours a day. And what it does is like a humanities professor that's in your pocket. So it's like Google, but on steroids. So you can ask it, you can use, I use it for a ton of research. I've researched you as well to have this conversation. But I find that it pulls from so many different language models that it kind of sounds like you're interacting with a human being. But it's not a human being. It's pulling from all these different resources from the internet and stuff like that. But there's so much that you can do with it.
I think that's the future. I think it is the future. Right now, it says that if you ask Watson or the computer a legal question, they're going to answer it correctly 90% of the time. Mm-hmm. If you go ask a lawyer a legal question, they're going to be 65%.
Yeah.
So no, I think that's where we're going, and that's why I keep telling people I'm going to speak to a group of graduates. Thursday. Hey, let me tell you about the future, and the future. And the future jobs are not going to be the jobs of today. They're going to be much, much different. Right now, technology, robotics are going to change how we do things. And you better adapt to it or you're going to be left behind.
I was listening to one of your interviews, and you were talking about how the Rio Grande Valley has very specific skills, and we're really good at what we do. Can you kind of touch on that? I think it was from like the plumbing, the welding, stuff like that, the agriculture.
Well, most of us are Hispanics in the Rio Grande Valley, and we have good dexterity. And, you know, as someone said, oh, what was that famous movie? That came out and said, "Oh, somos indios, you know, we're Aztecs, we know we're good mathematicians." I think that you know, we have a lot of talent here. I mean, when you consider that our college students that went into chess have become national champs. I mean, that's a very brainy game. You know, we have a lot of raw talent that we're not taking advantage of because we don't have the structure to bring it together, and that's what we're trying to do with this Prosperity Task Force is how do we capture this talent, the skills that we have, keep it here. I have a granddaughter that received the 40 acres scholarship for UT, if you're familiar with it. I mean, that's kind of the very top scholarship that you can get. She went to the honors program at UT Austin. She graduated. She interned with Facebook for 2 years. Facebook hired her immediately. She started making lots of money. She's not coming back. Mm-hmm. She's not coming back.
You know, it's an interesting thing that and maybe I'm wrong, you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that I feel that there just aren't very many role models out there. Do you see that from your end?
Golly, that, you know, I don't want to go there. I think that everything needs leadership. And we need to have leaders that aren't afraid to fail. So many of us in politics are afraid to fail and are afraid that they're not doing what the people want you to do. I've never worried about that. I worried about trying to exercise my best judgment in a decision because I can't go and say, well, people, what do you all want to do? Okay, because you're going to hear all kinds of different opinions. So which one is right, which one is wrong? So at the end of the day, you have to rely on your own judgment, you know, to move forward. And I always told my children, I said, look, I want to be Richard Cortez. I don't want to put a mask. I want people to know who Richard Cortez is. If they like me, I want to get reelected. And if they don't like me, then I shouldn't be reelected because they don't like me. Okay, so I'm good. I'm good. I'm good either way. But to try to answer your question. I feel that we are going to have a messiah here. I mean, we're going to have this Hispanic leader that's going to come in and turn us upside down with that person's leadership, that charisma that it's going to have, and really take us to the next level. I'm hoping that I'll see it while I'm alive. If I don't, I'm pretty sure that that person is coming.
Let's touch on the digital divide. I didn't really hear about this because I literally work in the internet every single day. So I assume that everybody knows about the internet. Can you kind of touch on that? Because it's sure. A very interesting thing.
Sure. The digital divide is very important. And it's one that we're paying a lot of attention to now. It came to full focus during COVID because as students couldn't go to school for in-person learning, they had to stay at home. Well, many of those areas, rural areas, didn't have access to the internet. They needed to come in or whatever. So we're trying to improve that by extending the infrastructure to all of Ottawa County. There's an infrastructure bill that came out where there's funds available for that. And I think that's important. You know, healthcare is going to be that. Right now I have a watch, one of those iPhone watches that, it'll tell me almost my vitals. Mm-hmm. I just push a button to tell me my vitals. So just imagine all that technology that you can have, but you have to have access to that internet.
Yeah, I almost feel like there's even going to be more of a divide because if the poverty doesn't go down and then the tech jobs go up, it's going to be monstrous, I think.
If we're not careful with it, then yes, that's absolutely right. That's why I told you that I have short-term goals, but my long-term goal is how do we fix that. I'm very encouraged that the business community is supportive, all of the superintendents, the academic community is supporting it, most of the cities. I think we only have one city that didn't sign a resolution in support of the Prosperity Task Force. I'm very encouraged with the acceptance of what we're trying to do.
When you sitting on top with all the stuff that you see, 10 to 12 million businesses will close this year in the United States. What can they do to mitigate that? Like how can they help themselves stay afloat? Because after COVID, and obviously granted it's COVID, a bunch of businesses closed, but I still see these businesses closing every single year. What do you see from your vantage point?
Well, the businesses of tomorrow are not the businesses of today. Technology and robotics are going to kill many of the jobs, but they're also going to open new jobs. But you have to be prepared for those new jobs to happen. You know, right now I tell people, take a job of some guy working at McDonald's that takes your order. That job is going to disappear because that job is going to go to someone in India or someone somewhere in the world that's working for pennies and not dollars, because through electronics and you can speak into microphones and say, I want a Big Mac with a double set of fries. Well, that person is receiving that message in India, transmitting it to the kitchen here in
instantly.
McAllen. Yeah, in McAllen, and we lost that job. That job went to somewhere else. I can show you a machine that can pick strawberries faster and better than a human being. So that's a scary thought. That's going to be my discussion this week when I talk to those high school graduates. You better pay attention to your environment, because that environment is changing very quickly. Don't look at the future in today's time, because it's going to be very different. The watch that we have, the phone that we have. Imagine what you can do with that phone.
Yeah.
You take pictures, video, access information. You know, I'm a bad speller. Hey, how do you spell this? Boom, it is. All of a sudden became a great speller. All I had to do was ask it to spell it for me.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
I almost feel like business owners kind of lose faith in the business, because I feel like a lot of the employees now have the upper hand. Like, I was talking to a business owner the other day, and she was like, I get employees come in all the time and say, I want this day off. I want this day off for mental health. And I want this day off for this. And I want this day off. They're commanding these things when 10 years ago, that did not exist. It was the employer that had all the power, but now it's kind of shifting. And I feel it's become like that because of the culture. I feel like people don't feel valued enough. And I might be as bold as to say is the business just is not good enough. Am I wrong?
You know, I don't know how to answer that question, because I don't understand a person like that. You know, if I give a job to somebody, you know, I want a certain allegiance, a certain ethics, behavior. You know, I want you to act properly when you're not being watched. You know, those are the good employees. But right now, you know, government gave entirely too much money to people to do nothing. And I think that was I think their intentions were good, but the outcome was not good.
Yeah.
Because what happened, you were a crutch for those people for a little while, but then it went away. So now what do you have? What do you have left? And we have, you know, we have that type of mentality now. So no, small businesses right now are hurting. I mean, every business that I go through around here in McAllen has got a help wanted sign. I wish I knew the answer to your question. I don't.
Yeah, I feel like there's a few skills that every business owner should know, and marketing is one, sales is one, how to get people in the door. Because at the end of the day, it's like you as a business owner are trying to escape the rat race from life. But honestly, you just took on more work, and that's the only way to make a successful business is be able to work your company every single day. And I feel like a lot of people that were doing it up to one point, they stop. And they get comfortable, like we had talked about earlier, but then they never do that thing again that got them to the point where they got to first.
Well, I think government plays a very important role in all of this. You know, I hear los padrecitos, you know, wanting a livable wage. They want to increase the hourly rate to $15 an hour. And I understand why, and I understand the compassion and the feeling that they have. But a lot of the jobs that people have are jobs in small businesses. And if you ask a small business to start paying you $15 an hour, which is almost double what minimum wage now is, then that business is going to close.
Yeah.
Because they can't survive. They can't survive with that.
And by default, every business owner wants to find the cheapest thing possible. Well, I know for a fact.
Well, the consumer wants to find everything as cheap as possible. So you're competing because the consumer wants to find cheaper. So if the small business owner can't absorb that additional cost, then they're going to be out of business. You know, that's what happened to us with the Walmarts and the Costcos and all this. You know, America was built around small businesses, and every town had you know, the little grocery store, the men's shop, and they had all this and that. Now you go to Walmart, and they have everything. It's strange, though. It's starting to turn back around. You're starting to see the Starbucks and these types of where specialty stores are opening up. We're going back to that maybe specialty store where the Walmarts and those people kind of brought everything together. And here, you know, we lost many jobs because of that.
Let me touch on the last three questions before we finish off the podcast. What top three skills do you think somebody needs to be competitive in the space that we're in right now?
Wow. Well, communications is extremely important. I tell all the people that work for me, I said, when I was a young accountant and I went to work for an accounting firm, I wanted to do two things. I wanted to understand my assignments. If somebody gave me an assignment, if I if I didn't understand it, then how can I finish it? So I want to make sure that I understood my assignment. And number two, when I started to work on my assignment, I'd go back to whoever gave it to me. Hey, is this what I should be doing? And if they told me yes, then I was golden. I understood the assignment, and what I was doing was going to, I was going to accomplish the assignment. I knew that I was going to be successful. So communications is very, very important. Then I was in public accounting, and I would tell my staff people, the more you know, the more you can sell. The more people you know, the more people you can sell it to.
Your network.
Okay. So know a lot and meet a lot of people, meet a lot of people. So when you're in a personal service business, so if you're not in a personal service business, then how do you communicate with that consumer? And what is the best way to communicate with that consumer? Consumers have a very short time span. They don't want to hear a verbose Richard Cortez. They want to hear a, you know, talking point, 3 or 4 second talking point that attracts you. So that communication is very important. But if you're going to be in business, you know, what is the consumer looking for, and how can you provide that at the lowest cost of the consumer? You know, we were in the laundry cleaning business. We cleaned laundry for the hospitals, and we wanted to make sure that nobody was better than us. So you study when you're cleaning and washing linen. Is there a temperature better than another? Is there a soap better than another?
You're optimizing the whole process.
Yeah, you look at everything, because if you just go on, I bought this soap, or my temperature is this, then you're going. But if you take science to help you, then that savings, that knowledge is going to give you a competitive edge against somebody else.
Yeah.
So to me, know a lot, learn a lot. Pass that savings on to the consumer, and you'll make your money through volume, because everybody wants to be with somebody like you.
What is your idea of success?
I'll tell you what my father told me. He said, "Mijito, do you want to be successful?" I said, "Of course, Dad." I said, "Well, what are your goals?" So, well, to be successful. He said, no. He said, "I'm not a very educated man, but go to the dictionary and look up the definition of success. It's the accomplishment of a goal." So it depends on what goal you have, whether you're going to be successful or not. You have to decide what's important to you. And if you accomplish those goals, then by definition, you're successful.
There has not been a day since I turned 40, or actually it was after COVID, that I have not thought about death. And it's a very interesting thing to me, because I never really think about it. In your accumulated lifetime and your experience, what is some of the best pieces of advice that you can give the younger generation?
We're creatures of habit and creatures of comfort. Don't let your desire to be comfortable interfere with developing good habits. I allow myself I'm technically obese. I'm not real fat, but I'm technically obese. I weigh more than that, because I develop bad habits in what I eat and what I consume. I look at my son Rick, and you know, he's like a bird. I mean, he doesn't eat a lot, and that's what he developed. That was his the habit of doing. So to me, develop good habits to stay healthy. because I can tell you, being a cancer survivor, twice cancer survivor, you can't do much if you're not healthy. So you take care of your body, you take care of yourself, what you're doing by developing good habits, that's what I would do. The second thing that I would do is, you know, having money makes life comfortable, but it doesn't necessarily make you happy. So to me, I approach life as the Dalai Lama: be happy with what you have. And you can train yourself to do that, because so many people, the best analogy that I can give you is you have two equal, very rich men, exactly the same net worth. One is happy and one is not happy. The one that's happy is happy with what he's got. The one that's unhappy is not happy with what he's got. They have identical the same amount of money. So a lot of it is mental, and you can train yourself. You can train yourself to do that. And of course, you know, your spiritual life. Your spiritual life is very important. I'm going to be 80 years old this year, so I mean, I'm just a few years over there from my lifespan. But I don't worry about when that day comes.
How do you find happiness?
Well, happiness is a state of mind, and to me, you have to train yourself to be an optimist as opposed to a pessimist. I see a bottle of water there. A pessimist says it's only half full. An optimist says, hey, it's I have half of the water. An optimist says I have half of the water. So I think happiness is a state of mind, and only you control your mind.
Yeah, so
work on it.
I find it very hard for a lot of people, because I feel like a lot of people have been kicked down and pushed it through life and stuff like that, and it's very hard for them to get the mental clarity. And I feel like a lot of people have to literally sit with themselves in a quiet space and get with those demons, whatever is in your head, and you got to work on yourself. But most people are not willing to put in the work.
Well, I had a conversation with one of my children one day, and they were crying, and I said, "What's wrong?" I said, "Oh, my friends, they never do enough for me, or this, and that." And I said, "Well, you're never going to be happy, okay?" I said, "Because you get up in the morning wanting for people to do things for you. Get up in the morning and serve others and do things for others, and you're going to see what a life-changing that's going to be." You know why? Because everybody loves a person like that.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. Judge, I appreciate your time. Thank you. I know Absolutely. You're very busy. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we finish off?
Just thank you for having me here. I'm still learning at my age, and I'm still trying to find the key to having a successful county judge program, and I'm working on what I think is the most beneficial to this county, and that is to help the people in need.
Judge, I wish you luck. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Thank you.